Save mental energy managing your WordPress site with easy-to-use DIY features from WP Engine's Managed WordPress Hosting. Visit wpengine.com/loveyourwork for up to 4 months free. This is Love Your Work. On this show, we introduce you to the people and give you the tools to carve out success by your own definition. I'm David Cadvey, and I'm a best-selling author and entrepreneur. Every Thursday, I love bringing you a new episode in which I dissect the unique path of a guest, what clues help them find their calling, how do they cut out the noise to focus, and where have they made compromises. Or I bring you lessons I've learned for myself. If this is your first time listening, be sure to check out some of our most popular episodes, Jason Fried on episode 1, neuroscientist John Cunios on episode 8, and Laura Roeder on episode 9. If you like what you hear, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and write a review. Just go to cadvey.net/review. I work unreasonably hard bringing you this show, and when you subscribe and review, it will help me keep doing that for you. And we recently hit the top 30 in the careers category. Thanks to you for reviewing and for subscribing. Speaking of working hard to bring you this show, this week, as you listen to this show, I am at the Podcast Movement Conference, hopefully attending informative talks and meeting other podcasters, and generally investing my time and money and energy to make the show even better for you. Today's guest has built a massive collection of online recipes. Whenever I'm searching for a recipe, I tend to search for the food item, then simply recipes, and I always find something healthy and delicious with clear instructions and beautiful photos, all posted by our guest today, Elise Bauer. Honestly, I probably don't have to type in the Simply Recipes part because the site is extremely popular. It's been featured in Time magazine and was named the number one food blog by the Daily Meal 4 years in a row. Whatever I'm looking for, I find it because Elise has posted about 1,600 recipes over the last 15 years. She started Simply Recipes when she was so sick that she had to move back in with her parents at the age of 40. And at first, she was hand-coding her recipes in static HTML and just posting them to her personal site, Elise.com, and now it's grown into this massive recipes site. It's so massive, in fact, that she recently sold it to Fexy Media, and she still handles all the cooking and writing and posting of recipes. I wanted to bring Elise's story to you not only because I love Simply Recipes, but also because she has such a great story. As you'll hear in the interview, during a difficult time, she took the little things that were good in her life and expanded upon them. She doubled down on love and built something great. Here's the interview. Want to maximize your email marketing? You should try ActiveCampaign. I switched last year from MailChimp, and I love it. With email marketing, marketing automation, and a sales CRM, it's a powerful, intuitive, and complete platform. Claim your 14-day free trial of ActiveCampaign at activecampaign.com/loveyourwork. I'm here with Elise Bauer from Simply Recipes. And Elise, when we were first scheduling this interview, you were talking about that you wanted to have it at a certain time because you were thinking that you would be cooking after that time. So I'm curious, what's your plan? What are you going to be cooking today after this interview?
Well, right now I'm working on a berry tart recipe, and I'm also starting video. So I'm experimenting with videotaping. I guess, why do we call it videotaping anymore when there's no tape involved?
Right.
So how do we say that? I'm videoing? I'm shooting a video. I'm experimenting with shooting videos, and those take a lot more time than recipes. So
yeah,
I have lots of things that I'm always working on. And right now what's in my brain is the berry tart, and I already have all of my strawberries and blueberries and raspberries and all the ingredients I need to get going with that one.
So do you typically then work your sort of cooking schedule into your day? Like, is that going to be your lunchtime, and then that's when you usually cook, and then there's another section of your day where you're usually doing other types of things? Is there a pattern to this?
Cooking for the website is dependent on the light. because I shoot with natural light and with daylight. And so right now it's longest days of the year. And so I have more time. In the wintertime, the days are shorter. And so I have to have all of my cooking done by 1:30 or I've completely lost my light. And so depending if I want to cook something for the site, I know I have to get going on it by 11 o'clock in the morning. Otherwise, it's not going to get done in time for me to actually shoot it. And the first thing I do in the morning is I get up and I answer cooking, like I answer comments. I answer cooking questions. People are always leaving comments on the recipes and they leave them overnight. So I wake up in the morning and I have a bunch of questions to answer.
All the people in the other hemisphere.
Right. Wanting to know why I'm not posting recipes in metric. Because I don't have metric now. Because I haven't thought of it. Or, oh yes, I guess I should think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you have so many recipes up there. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime looking for a recipe, I pretty much Google, oh, asparagus simply recipes, and there's just going to be a dozen different asparagus recipes. Mm-hmm. How many recipes are on the site?
Do you have any idea? I think right now about 1,600.
Wow.
I've been at this for 13 years, so 1,600 doesn't actually seem like a lot to me. But it is a lot when you actually think about, well, they're all live in terms of they're all active. People are leaving comments. And every time I add to the database, I'm just adding, you know, more places for people to then interact with me and ask questions. And I'm also constantly going back and revising and updating older recipes. Mm-hmm. So I started this 13 years ago, and I really didn't know nearly as much about cooking as I do now. And so sometimes I look at something that I posted 10 years ago and I think, oh, I don't know if I do it that way now. I think now that I know more about cooking, I think I would go about this in a slightly different way. And so I revised the recipes, and almost all of the old recipes need to be rephotographed because the standards of food photography have been going up and up and up. The bar keeps on getting raised every day.
And you're just having to learn right along with that. Were you into photography before you started doing this?
Not really. I've always took pictures just the way we all did on film. I remember those days. Mm-hmm. But we were limited by our budgets because you had to pay to have that film developed. And when digital photography first started, that was just a complete revolution. But we just had point and shoot cameras. And when I started the site 13 years ago, anyone who's doing anything in this, and there were only a handful of bloggers at that time, we were just using point and shoot cameras. And because, I don't even know if they had DSLR cameras that were digital within a price range that we could actually.
It was quite a while before they did, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Right. So I think what has really happened is that the tools have become so powerful and so relatively inexpensive that it's allowed millions of people to very quickly become so much better at photography because they're able to, you know, they have access to great equipment, really high quality equipment and lenses, and they can practice without paying for it, right? So they don't have to pay for development. They can just, you shoot and it's free once you've made the initial investment in the camera. And so, and even the low-end digital DSLRs like a Canon Rebel, they're great cameras. And you can get them a used one on eBay for $300. Mm-hmm. And that means you have professional quality equipment available for anybody.
Yeah.
And so everybody's been getting a lot better at this, and including me, because I have to. And when I look out and I see, oh my gosh, my friends are taking such amazing, beautiful pictures. How do I do that? It just motivates me to get better at the craft.
Yeah. I'd like to circle back to the start of Simply Recipes. How did this site start?
So sort of the story is around 15 years ago, 15 or 16 years ago, I turned 40. I'm 55 now, turned 40. And I was living in San Francisco, and I got into ocean swimming, and ocean swimming builds up an appetite. Around the same time, I decided that I needed to become a better cook. So I started begging my parents for recipes. I was living in San Francisco. They were in Sacramento. And I would have to call for the most basic information. And I started collecting these recipes and hand coding them and putting them on a website that I had called Elise.com that I'd built from scratch with HTML. And I'm sort of a nerd, having been in this industry for a while. I used to work for Apple. Anyway, so I started collecting the recipes and hand coding them. And then I got sick. I got a flu that wouldn't go away. And I like it really wouldn't go away. I couldn't work. I would have the flu for 3 weeks and then I would be fine for two. And then I get the flu again for 3 weeks. And I mean, full on flu and fever and everything. And so after 2 years of that, I was completely wiped out. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't been able to work. So I was running through my life savings and I just couldn't really take care of myself anymore. And so I moved home with my parents in Sacramento, and it was right that same month that I had moved all of these hand coded pages of recipes into this really cool thing called a blog. It was a movable type blog that, I don't even know if anyone even knows what movable type was, but it was before WordPress.
I do. I remember. I had my blog was on movable type. It went from Blogger, and then I switched to movable type, and then now I'm on WordPress. Yeah.
There you go. Right. That is
natural evolution.
That's generally how those of us have been doing this for a while. That's generally the progression. We've all ended up on WordPress because it's so much easier. So I had started this movable type blog and started putting recipes into it around the same time that I had just sort of said, I just can't do this anymore and I have to move home. And there's more to that story too. I mean, my roommate had brain cancer and died, and there was just a lot of
What did it feel like at that time when all that was going on? And then, you know, you're 40 years old and you've got to move back in with your parents because mm-hmm. you're too sick to take care of your, like, did you, what did,
it was
what
horrible.
Did you see your future as at that point? I mean, you certainly didn't foresee this.
Right. So I get sick. I'm 40 was great, but by the time I was at the end of that year, it wasn't so great. And I'm 42 years later, I'd just given up and I thought I have to move home with my mom and dad. And I was sick. I was really sad because I'd lost one of my closest friends to this devastating illness. I hadn't been able to work. I felt like a complete failure. And not only that, but I didn't see how I was going to get better, because I had been trying to get better and I wasn't getting any better. And I just knew I couldn't stay where I was. And so every day I would watch, at the end of the day, I would watch television with my mom and I'd hold her hand throughout the whole show because I was afraid I'd lose her too. And it was really, really hard. And at the same time, I felt incredibly thankful and grateful that I had these wonderful parents in my life who could take in their adult daughter without knowing how long she was going to be mooching off of them or staying mm-hmm. with them, and just provide a safe place for me. And not everybody has that. A lot of people don't. So my life had completely fallen apart. If you don't have your health, you don't have anything. Really, you have your parent. Maybe you have family, and I did have family, and maybe you have God. Maybe that's something that can support you. But when your health falls apart, it's you can't do anything. And so those first couple years at home, it was really hard. I really tried to get better. And then 2 years into living at home with my mom and dad, I had a relapse because I'd been trying to get better too hard. And one summer, I spent 2 months in bed. I would just get up to eat. And because I couldn't, I was sick. But I was still blogging this whole time, and I was taking pictures of what my parents were cooking, and I was writing it up on Simply Recipes, and it was still early. This was when I first moved home, was 2003. In those first couple years, there are only a handful of us. And for me, every day was this, I could choose between feeling sorry for myself, or I could just take a deep breath, go with it, and add a recipe to the website. Right? And
bit by bit, you built this huge body of work just by kind of working with your in-between time, that you the times when you had enough energy. Put something up on the blog, and piece by piece, it just piled up over time.
Piece by piece. And one of the things that I noticed, a lot of people who blog, or at least back in the early days, they revealed a lot of personal information about what they were going through. And I couldn't do that. I felt so fragile that I just couldn't handle exposing my, I couldn't even handle talking about it because it was just so difficult. And so for me, Simply Recipes was my sort of treasure place. It was my my place where there was just goodness and love, and that all of my positive, loving energy was centered on that. In terms of just capturing the recipes that my mom and dad were cooking, talking about them, everything about that site for me was about love and family and this little bright spot in my life that if I looked around, it just seemed really, really, really dark.
So yeah, you took all the things that you could feel gratitude about in your life, and you sort of doubled down on those things.
I amplified them.
And then they snowballed and have become this huge site, 1,600.
And that's the thing that I think when life is hard, it's easy to sort of kind of get sucked into the morass of thinking about how hard it is. But one of the things that I learned through this process is that whatever you pay attention to, whatever it is you pay attention to in your life, you're going to get more of that. So if you pay attention to how crappy life is, guess what? Your life is going to just get more crappy because you're focusing all this attention on all the negativity, and you become like this magnet of darkness. And when things are tough, that's the pull. The pull is this sort of dark vortex kind of sucking you down. And so the mental discipline is to acknowledge that that is the natural progression of things, and to basically take a stand for the light and take a stand for, I'm just going to keep my mind focused on everything that is good and joyful and loving and wonderful in this world and in my life, and see what I can do to bring some of that to other people. Not completely ignore my health. So, I mean, I had to pay attention to it, but I didn't have to give in to the darkness of it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it sounds like, so food was this integral thing, you know, it was a connection between yourself and your parents. And it was also one of the reasons why I like your recipes so much is because, I mean, I haven't been in bed for 2 years or whatever like you, but I've struggled with kind of like a chronic inflammation illness, and so I've got to be really careful about what I eat. And I like that your recipes, there's, I'm never going to see like add vegetable oil or, you know, any low quality ingredients. It's all like really healthy stuff. Yep. And so what you eat, you were eating well, and that was probably helping you get a little bit better too. So it was this conduit through which you could grow so many things.
Yeah. I mean, well, here we are in Sacramento, which is, it's completely surrounded by farmland, and we grow so much of the nation's produce right here. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and people in Sacramento, especially of my parents' age, they're in their 80s now, and they grew up in the Great Depression, and they lived through the war, the Second World War. People gardened in their generation, right? So I grew up with parents who gardened, and I think some people in the Midwest still garden. You don't necessarily garden if you live in an urban environment.
Yeah, my parents gardened, but I don't have a garden now. Yeah,
right. It's harder, but here we garden, and even though it's California and we're not so connected to the seasons as they are in New England, we're definitely connected to the seasons when it comes to growing food, because every food has its season. And so when you garden and you grow things, then you are awash in the plenty of that garden and what you're growing when things are in season. So when our plum trees are producing plums, we don't have a handful of plums. We have bushels of plums that we need to do something with. So we, you know, we cook because we have, you know, we cook seasonally because we have all of the seasonal food, and it's wonderful. I mean, there's nothing better than a white nectarine picked fresh from the tree when it's ripe. And these nectarines that you can grow yourself, they are so, so fragile and so tender that the minute you pick them, you bruise them. So you have to eat them right away. You can't actually buy them anyplace because they're so delicate.
You have to pick it off the tree.
You have to pick it off the tree. And I used to, when I lived in San Francisco, I used to come home to Sacramento in mid-July when the white nectarines were, we had a white nectarine tree. It has since died, but we had this white nectarine tree for years. And I would come home just to eat the nectarines. They were that good. They were like, you know, this is this is sort of the kind of fruit that you take a bite and like the joy just and tingles throughout your whole body. It was, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's a parallel in here somewhere between like, you know, eating seasonal food, you're sort of going with the ebb and flow of everything around you. And, you know, in your life, you were going with the ebb and flow as you had this challenge of this illness, and you doubled down on the things that were working, right? That was the thing that was working at that season for you, was that you had the family there to support you through that challenge. And you just, that just exponentiated.
Yeah. Is that a word?
Exponentiated is a word. I don't know if that's the right way to use it. Probably, perhaps not.
You're a man after my own heart. I love inventing words.
Yeah,
use that one.
Exponentiate. Go for it. You can. I've got a lot of other ones too. So, were you into cooking before you ended up back in your parents' house?
Oh my gosh. So, I think objectively one would say no, but in my own mind, I figured I grew up with two great cooks, so therefore I know how to cook, right? Mm-hmm. I know how to make a quesadilla, therefore I can cook. And I've never been afraid to cook. I've always thought it was my birthright. I always figured if my mom could do it, of course I could do it. Like, it can't be that hard, right? If my mom and dad can do it. And so, you know, I hit my 40s and I realized I had the faintest idea what I was doing, and I was making things that even I didn't want to eat, or making things that only I would eat and inflicting them on my friends. I realized that, oh my gosh, this is a basic life skill that I really need to get better at. And what I can tell you is that I love to eat. And so if you learn how to cook, then you can be assured that you will eat well. And if you teach your friends how to cook, then, and you teach others how to cook, then you will eat well when you're visiting them.
The challenge with this, though, is that you have to decide to cook before you're hungry, because if you wait until you're hungry to cook, then you can't cook. You just got to grab whatever.
There is, so if you, and I'm just the worst offender at this because my life is I cook for the website and I'm cooking things that serve between 4 and 8. Right now I have a huge wild rice salad in my refrigerator that feeds 8, right? So I've been eating it for days. And So I'm working, and it gets 7 o'clock at night. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I haven't planned anything for dinner. I either go to my parents for dinner or I eat a leftover from what I've been cooking for the website. And so here I'm helping other people have these wonderful meals where my life is so disorganized. I don't usually cook that way because I'm cooking for the site.
sort of silly. So you yourself aren't enjoying that much of your own recipes?
No, I enjoy it. It's just I enjoy it in batches, you know. So, you know, I hate wasting food. So I make something and I either have to eat it over several days or I have to find a lot of people to give it to. You know, I make a big casserole. I made a Tex-Mex casserole last week and it feeds an army. So I cut it into big pieces and wrapped it up and gave some to my boyfriend, gave some to my parents and kept some for myself. Now hanging out with my parents, my father starts thinking about what he wants to eat for dinner the moment he wakes up in the morning. And so he's already thinking this one through. And this is what I notice about my friends who actually lead a more normal life than I do is, it takes some planning. You have to know what it is that you want to cook and think about it. And if you and pull some meat out to defrost in the morning so it's ready by the time you want to cook, and then it'll also allow the time to do that. But most, you know, a lot of people have families and kids and they have more structured lives where I don't have kids and my mom and dad live down. I moved out of their house 7 years ago. They live down the street. We only live a few houses away, so anytime I'm hungry, I can actually go over there.
Like, oh, I'm exhausted. I've been cooking all day. Please make me some dinner.
Please excuse me. I can bring pie. I made 3 pies.
Wow.
Right, because if I'm cooking all day, you know, there's one recipe. You know, sometimes the recipes I make several times, and now I've got many, many batches of this one thing, but I don't have. I don't have a balanced meal, so I'll go down the street for that. My boyfriend's also an incredibly good cook. He's from France. He's from Provence, and he grew up
automatically. Yeah.
I mean, right? It's like, you know, talk about being in your genes and a birthright. I mean, I think when you grow up in a place like the south of France, you just everybody cooks. Everybody, and it's like growing up in Tuscany. Everyone gardens. Everybody cooks. There's not like no male female thing going on there. Everybody does.
We're going to take a quick break. Being productive in your business is all about mind management, not time management, which is why I use WP Engine's Managed WordPress Hosting to host all of my WordPress sites. They have really easy-to-use DIY tools, so managing my site is as simple as can be, and I can focus my mental energy on the things that I do best, like bringing you this show. I don't have to worry about installing WordPress, I don't have to worry about keeping it up to date, and I don't have to worry about backups or security. WP Engine takes care of all of it for me. With WP Engine's tools, you can quickly launch new sites, protect existing sites, and test plugin updates. They back up everything daily, and you can make changes on the staging version of your WordPress site before pushing your changes live. They also have a built-in CDN. And what does that mean? That means that your WordPress site is super fast. Visit wpengine.com/loveyourwork for up to 4 months free with WP Engine. So when you were sick and you're at your parents' house and you're starting this site, and you obviously didn't have any expectation that it would turn into this.
All right.
Right?
Right.
Do you think that if you did have that expectation, if that would have held you back from being in the here and now with it, or?
I actually think, you know, there's a difference between an expectation and an intention. So I think if you have an expectation about how something is going to turn out, then you're just setting yourself up for disappointment, because things never, they just never turn out the way you expect them to, or they rarely do. And my intention was to put my time doing things that I really love to do, and only putting my time on things that I love to do. And with the idea that, there's a possibility that I might actually be able to make some money off of this, which could supplement rent. You know, when I decided, you know, when I got well and could move back to the city. I did get well and never moved back to the city, never moved back to San Francisco, just stayed here. So I thought there was a possibility that this could supplement my living. And
so, wait, sorry, your plan in your mind at that time was that you were going to move back to the city. Is that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I lived in the city, yeah. Right? So I had moved to Sacramento because that's where my parents were. I had always intended to move back to San Francisco, but I just got used to being here and got used to the pace here. So I think that this work takes so much. It takes so much effort. It's really hard. You know, it's so challenging. You're constantly learning. Writing, photographing, doing the rest. I mean, it's like this learning curve is as steep as a wall. It's like, you know, like every morning I think I'm just bumping my head up against everything I don't know. And so you have to really love it in order to stick with it. It's sort of like, it's a marathon that just doesn't end. If, you know, when you're a marathon runner, you better really like running, because that's where you're going to have to do a lot to get in shape for a marathon. And so you don't start running because you want to win marathons and get a big prize. You start running because you like to run. And wow, if you can get good at it, you know, maybe you can run a marathon. And if you're really good, maybe you could actually do well. But it still starts with a love of running. And I think that's a kind of a good analogy for blogging, that you actually really have to love what it is you're writing about. And because at the end of the day, that's what you have, because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. You don't know how well it's going to go.
And because you were already doubling down on the little pieces of love that you had in your life already, and trying to expand on those things and use that light to blind out the darkness, yeah. Right? That helped propel you through creating this huge body of work.
Just focusing on what made me happy. And you know, the thing about food is that it's nourishing. It's it's happy making. I mean, it's something that we do to show love for ourselves and our friends and our family. And it's how we take care of each other. So it's a naturally really positive, life affirming practice. And when I first started blogging, I started a blog about music, one about, I was writing book reviews. I'd started a blog about marketing because my background was in high-tech marketing. And and then food, I just thought, well, I'm just going to take everything that's in my brain and put it on the internet so other people can have access to what's in my brain. And what I found was that food was the thing that was the most fun to write about. And it was the one that resonated most with people, that most people were interested in, and that, the marketing stuff I was writing, it was, you know, good professional work, but my gosh, it just took a lot of effort and not that many people were interested in it. And I didn't really like writing it that much.
So you were trying a lot of different things. Were those all done on, movable type too, or were those hand coded?
No, it was all, those were when I discovered the power of a blogging platform. And then I thought,
previously you were just hand coding every recipe, yeah. Right? Which is a lot of work.
Actually, no, now that I think about it, I did have a whole music part of that early website that was also all hand coded. I hand coded everything, and you know, hand coding navigation, hand coding everything.
And it was just elise.com too. You hadn't decided like, oh, I'm going to start this recipe site, and you need to think about what the domain name is, or and you just started with elise.com. And then when it reached a certain point, you spun it off into its own thing, and now it's its own empire.
I still have a blog at elise.com. It's called Not Always On, because I think I post to it once a year. It's like, yeah, I'm not always on this.
Yeah, who has time when you've got so many recipes that you're
space to work on? Exactly.
What's the what's your recipe development process? How does a recipe go from conception to actually being featured on the site?
If I could show you my whiteboard of ideas in my office, I don't know if I could. I would. And
there you go.
You can see it from there. It's whiteboard of ideas. And so I'm constantly just coming up with ideas, and the ideas have to do with, the season that we're in. You know, it's, and also just what's in my refrigerator and what I feel like eating, and, what would be a good thing to have right about now. And I'm always sort of feeling like I'm running behind, though. I think I'm starting to think about having an editorial calendar where I can actually map out some of the stuff. So I'm not just what I would want to cook this week, but what would be a good idea to cook, you know, what would be a good idea to have something on the site 3 months from now? So I can
start prepping for Christmas.
Right? Now's the time that we
Thanksgiving. You don't have the editorial calendar plans for Thanksgiving, or
we're working on it. We're working. I'm trying to get more organized. Trying to get more organized now. And so, you know, there are, you know, some of these ideas are just riffs off of things that I've already done. So, say I wanted to do a poblano corn chowder. Well, I already have a corn chowder recipe on the site, and One of the ways to make a corn chowder great is to make the stock with the corn cobs. So you would cut off the corn, and you have these corn cobs, and then you would simmer those corn cobs in either stock or milk or water or something to help get a lot of that corniness out of the cobs. And then you've got this corn stock. And so it's like, well, now how would I implement, how would I include poblanos in that, and or what else would be really good with it? So I'm sort of riffing off of basics, and then typically I will write it out first, like, okay, so what are we going to do with this recipe? What's the approach? What should be in it? If we have poblanos and corn, should we have some potatoes in there too? That might be a good idea. What else would go with that? Well, poblanos also really love cream, And so maybe it should be sort of a creamy soup. Are you already getting hungry?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're doing so much brainstorming. You've done so much cooking that you're sort of like the same way that Mozart might have composed a symphony in his own head. You're sort of cooking in your brain, or are you actually experimenting with these?
Well, first, you have to put it out in my brain, brain first. Usually for the recipes. And thank you for comparing my thought process to Mozart. Like, that will never happen again. But I appreciate it. And some, you know, some people, when I cook with my boyfriend Guy, he's French, his name is Guy.
Guy, yeah, that's
Guy Maupassant. Like it's Guy, like, but pronounced Guy.
Like Guy, that's what I usually use to cook with, yeah.
Right, spelled a little bit differently. But he just pulls ingredients out of the refrigerator and he starts cooking. And he just goes along adding this and adding that as he goes. And it's very hard to replicate what he's done because he forgets what he started out with sometimes. So I ask him, how did you make this? And he can't even remember. So I get to eat really great food. I have no idea how we made it. With me, I usually think things through first, at least to start. And then as I sort of test something out, I may decide, wow, you know, this needs a splash of vinegar, or things often need more acid to brighten them up. Or it's too acidic, it needs a dash of sugar, or it needs more sweetness, therefore maybe we should have some onions, or, you know, so... You know.
So you're thinking about chemistry? Have you read the book by Harold McGee on food and cooking about the chemical reactions between all the different foods and such? Are you thinking about chemistry that way?
Absolutely. I have that book. It is well earmarked and yellow highlighted, and I've met Harold McGee.
Wow.
I've learned a lot from him. And so, yeah, I'm always thinking about that. Things that you wouldn't even think of. You know, one of the things that Harold told me, we were at a lunch. He said, you know, when people take tomatoes and they cut them in half and they squeeze out the seeds, there's an incredible amount of flavor right around those seeds. And so when you squeeze out those juices and seeds, you're actually getting rid of a lot of the flavor in the tomato. And I hadn't thought about that because it's something that, you know, it's sort of a classical Italian thing to do to squeeze out the seeds. But when I started following Harold's advice and leaving them in, then you're going to get more tomato-y flavor because there's actually a lot of tomato flavor right around the seeds and things like that. And I also refer to Shirley Corer. She is a Southern cook and food scientist along the lines of Harold McGee. She has several cookbooks out, Cookwise and Bakewise, and she dives very deeply into the chemistry of recipes, where Harold tends to be more focused on the science and lore of food and techniques.
He's more on like the meta level of, okay, here's all the different things that happen with eggs and different cooking materials and different cooking methods. Yeah. What's her name?
Gets deeper into the recipes and also more into things like, you know, that she's how I learned how to make a really good meringue, for example. And so she's going to be talking about the things that bakers really care about. Like, how do you keep that meringue from shrinking? Mm-hmm. Well, you make it sturdier by cooking some cornstarch and whipping that into the meringue before you bake it and make sure it's actually adhered to the pie crust. You know, things that are more detailed, but also science-based. And so she's another good resource that if I ever have a question, I consult.
Oh, that's great to have that resource. Yeah, anytime you're working with eggs, it seems like. I remember the egg part of on food and cooking is fascinating. Like, you know, I didn't realize that when you're whipping eggs in a copper bowl, it's actually interacting with the copper.
I know, isn't that
crazy?
Doing
these things with egg white, yeah.
Right, which is why they have, you know, they sell copper bowls just for whipping, you know, because that's what people used before they had electric mixers. They used copper bowls and a really, really strong arm. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, we don't do that so much anymore. People use electric blenders and mixers, and that's fine by me. Mm-hmm. As long as it gets people cooking, that's what I do.
So as you're developing a recipe, are you keeping all the records in your brain, or is there a particular tool that you're using to keep these records and develop the recipe?
Oh, I just have lots of notebooks around. Let's see if there's one in this notebook. I mean, I just keep notebooks.
Paper notebooks. Is there a particular type of notebook that you swear by? Notebook and pen combination?
I prefer spiral notebooks because they lay flat and you can tear out the pages. And so I've got this one spiral notebook that I will put all my notes about writing a recipe. And it's a small book. It's not big. It's more like this size. Small. And what is that about? Like, I don't know, 5x7.
Doesn't take up too much space on the counter. You can set it next to things.
Doesn't take up too much space. And then when I have, you know, I'll put all my notes there. And then if I've actually published the recipe to the site, I just pull those pages out of the notebook. That way they're not cluttering up the notebook. Mm-hmm. And because if I put the note, if I've already put the recipe on the site, then I don't need them in the notebook anymore.
Right.
All the information's on the website.
That's your method of organization. Really simple.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wrap it up with some of our usual questions that I ask every guest.
Okay.
What's the biggest compromise that you've had to make to get where you are right now?
I have no idea how to answer that question. I take no prisoners, no compromises. I think, you know, okay. So the thing that has been hard for me to compromise over is that I eat a lot more sugar than I would like to, and that I did before I started this site. And therefore I've gained 20 pounds over the last 13 years. And I look at myself, and so I've grown a couple sizes in clothes. And, you know, part of that is just getting older, but part of it is having to make a lot more sweet things and eat more food than I would normally eat.
Yeah.
And so in terms of a compromise, it's like, okay, well, it's just comes with the territory. I don't like wasting food. And I believe that you really have to eat the food that you make and that you're suggesting that other people make,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't like making food that I'm not willing to eat and enjoy myself. In fact, I'm just not going to do it. And I may not have a mug brownie every day. I may not even have it once a year. You know, so that's sort of like I won't eat badly all the time. Like, man, I'm okay with this. You know, in my life, I grew up with, we had dessert once a month, but with this website, I end up eating more food and more sweet food than I would normally do if I didn't have the website.
They're like the sacrificial brownies that you have to eat for the good of your readers.
And the problem is that they're really good. I have no self-control when it comes to food. It's actually genetic. I did one of those 23andMe genetic like DNA tests, and they said, oh, look, you have a huge appetite and you lack self-control when it comes to food. That it was written in the.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah. I didn't even know that it could be genetic, right? So I have no self-control when it comes to food. So therefore, thank goodness I have a good high metabolism, or else I would have gained more weight. So yeah, so that is my compromise. My compromise is I'm eating more than I would normally.
That sounds like a good compromise to have to make, actually. When have you left money on the table, and what did you get in exchange for leaving the money on the table?
Who leaves money on the table?
No.
Like, You mean opportunities that I could
I think that it's like one of these things that really tells you a lot about what a person values is a time when they decide that, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do this other thing instead because there's this other thing that I value rather than money. Yeah.
So when it comes to a website and monetization, there are lots of ways to monetize a website. And I earn a living off of my website, and which, by the way, is no longer mine because Simply Recipes sold. Did you knew that, right?
Like, no, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, no, we sold Simply Recipes. I still run it, but the ownership now belongs to a completely different group.
I'm a bad podcast host for not finding that in my research.
Let me answer your question about money on the table first, and that is early on. There's always been a push to make more money from the site, put more ads on it, do more sponsored posts, do a lot of these money earning things. And so often I have just said no to a lot of opportunities, and I probably would have made a lot more money if I had put a lot more ads on the site a lot earlier.
There's not a lot of ads on the site. Yeah.
Right. And so, but the thing is that what's more important to me is that I'm building something that I'm proud of and that I use and my family uses. And so if I don't like using the website because I think the ads are too intrusive, or if I think the, you know, like what I'm seeing isn't reflective of, you know, it isn't a place where I want to go, then why would I inflict that on anybody else? And so, and I've had lots of talks with this over the years with my parents, saying, you know, we could make a lot more money if we did this, but then the experience would be really bad. And so I'm not going to do it. And, because, you know, the site makes enough, we're doing fine. And so I think those are always these choices that you have to make, in terms of what are you going to, like, where do you draw the line? Because we have to have advertising or something in order to actually pay for the server costs and pay for your time and pay the rent or mortgage or whatever. But how far is too far? And I've always tried to err on the not overdoing it side. And so that's that. Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I could imagine that, I mean, having had the experience that you had where you had to rely on your parents for a little while, that one could very easily get paranoid about money and feel like they constantly had to make every last bit possible. And actually in the process that would backfire and they would end up making less than they might have normally.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you the site has always done well, and I've always lived way beneath my means, so I've never worried about that. I also had a strong career before I got sick, so this whole thing of cooking and it was a hobby that made money. No, it had nothing to do with what I was, what I've done professionally in the past. Nothing. And so it's more, so I didn't, it never felt to me like I had to try to wring as much every dime out of the site. Mm-hmm. So can I tell you about,
Please. This
was acquired. We were acquired, on April 15th. By a company called Fexy Media, and Fexy is the owner of Serious Eats. You know that website?
Oh, yeah, that's the brand of
and Ed Levine. Right?
Oh, okay. I'm thinking of who is the guy that had the show that he would talk about chemistry a lot.
Oh, you're thinking about Alton Brown, but this
that's a different. That's Good Eats, right? Yeah,
that's good, right? This is Serious Eats, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Food Lab, Kenji Lopez-Alt. He came out with a cookbook called The Food Lab out of a lot of the work he had done with Serious Eats, where he has a column called The Food Lab, and they also own Road Food, which is an NPR. Show Jane and Michael Stern, who they drive around the country and they explore different places to get good food. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a startup-y organization. And I decided that with all of the changes in this whole marketplace with, you know, things are just moving really, really fast, that I wanted to not hold the risk of the whole business on my own shoulders anymore. And so I decided to sell the ownership of Simply Recipes to Fexy Media and continue to run it. So it's sort of like being a restaurant chef owner who decides to sell the the restaurant to someone else, but stay being the chef. So that's me. I'm still head chef.
Yeah. Were there any things that in particular that you did to sort of manage control or over decisions in the future that might be made over the site? I mean, you're talking about these concerns about experience. Do you have any sort of safeguards in place to make sure that they aren't ever saying, oh, well, we need to put an interstitial ad that just hits people in the face right when they arrive? Or
given that I am no longer the owner, ultimately I don't, you know, I can't control what happens. Ultimately, if they wanted to wreck the site, they could, but they just spent a lot of money buying it and retaining me to run it with the idea that, like, I know what works and what doesn't work. And so one of the reasons that I like these guys is they really respected what I built and my judgment when it comes to running the site. And so they're fairly hands-off, really hands-off, actually. And they've been that way with Serious Eats as well. So they're not trying to wreck what they've acquired.
That's great.
They want to build on what's already great and do it in a way that helps the site become even more successful and relevant in the future. Mm-hmm. So and that's why I decided to work with them and sell the business to them.
Yeah. What was the last book that you read that changed the way that you saw something? It could be about any topic. It doesn't have to be about cooking even.
Oh my gosh. I'm reading a really, really good book right now, but I forget the name of it. It's about education in Finland and South Korea and how their systems are set up differently. And I wish I could remember the name of it because I'm right in the middle of it. It's a really great book. What's another good one? I just have so many that I'm a book reader, but I read them for maybe a chapter and then I just completely fall asleep afterwards. I read a great book about Cleopatra.
Oh, okay.
Cleopatra, of all people. Yeah.
And was it called Cleopatra or?
Yeah,
it was.
It was a biography of Cleopatra and absolutely fascinating. The story of her and Mark Antony and Julius Caesar and I don't know what that has taught me other than, you know, at a macro level, things change and whole civilizations can get turned around in just an instant, which is what happened with Egypt. You know, Cleopatra was the last of this long line of people running it. It dated back to Alexander the Great. And when when the Romans ended up taking over, everything shifted and this great civilization of Egypt kind of completely dissolved and all of their structures for, you know, how you manage millions of people everything changed and went away. And it was interesting also reading because you see how civilizations completely fall apart. And so all of these things that we take for granted, you know, our human life cycle, our human lifetime is so short in the broad scheme of things. And so here we are sort of enjoying this incredible, this historically peaceful period of time. But I think we've almost become rather lackadaisical, or are just accepting that this is normal. But it isn't. I mean, it takes a concerted intention to keep our republic together and to keep. So anyway, you know, these are the things that I think about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like read about, you know, when you read about ancient history and you realize all these civilizations, they're gone. They got destroyed. They got wiped out. And how do we protect how do we protect our civilization right now? So right. Those are
and
the things.
Also, I mean, I can also teach you to just appreciate the here and now, because that's where you are. And don't right. forget that the happiness and peace that you enjoy relies upon all these other things that are almost invisible to you. And
by the way, like there are millions and millions of people in this world, hundreds of millions of people that do not have that, you know, there are something like 65 million displaced people this year. And so, and it's not, you know, this is sort of an accident of birth that we have, that like I have ended up here and in this time, mm-hmm. And with the parents I have and with the brain that I have. And so I don't take anything for granted. So that was the reminder. It's like, just don't take any great history and don't take anything for granted.
Do you make your bed?
Great question. Eventually.
Oh, you do?
Eventually. Yeah, I do. Eventually. So, it's not made right now. It's airing out.
I was going to say, I've actually been doing a little bit of research on this and realized that there's at least one study out there where they found that a bed that's been made right after getting out mm-hmm. of bed is basically a perfect breeding ground for dust mites.
Yeah. You air it out. Let it be really messy for several hours, and that's what it is right now. And so sometimes I work from home. So sometimes in the middle of the day, I'll go up into my room and go, okay, time to make the bed. Make it. But yeah, not
let it air
not
out
usually.
A little bit first.
Let it air out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've told this great story about facing this challenge in your life and doubling down on the things that were good in your life and to get where you are today. Do you have a final message for our listeners?
You know, that's a very, very good question. Let's see if I do. The first thing I think is to focus on whatever is positive in your life and just keep moving toward that. Choose what works for you. And it's different from follow your bliss or do what you love. I'm a super practical person. I think we need to like make sure that we have our bases covered in terms of, you know, rent, like shelter and, you know, but right. Like just, yeah. Make sure that you're doing what you love can actually pay the bills, or don't quit your day job until you know that you can actually make money off of doing something that you love. But in that context of practicality, I think if we keep on focusing on what's working and what's positive, that will be really helpful. So there's that bit of advice. Another bit of advice that I like to give people is don't wait for anyone else to give you permission to go live your life and do something great. Don't wait for the world to give you permission to be great. It never will. It just never will. So you just have to go out and do great things. And when you see what you love, go do that. Go do great things. Don't wait for permission.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. And where can people find more of you?
Well, right now, simplyrecipes.com. I'm also on Instagram at simplyrecipes and Twitter at simplyrecipes, Facebook at simplyrecipes, and
Snapchat even.
I'm on Snapchat. Snapchat is Simply Recipes. I'll find even more. You know, I've been
Pinterest.
I'm on Pinterest, and someone like, right? But Snapchat's actually a lot of fun, and I'll do more behind the scenes there. And it just, I love Snapchat because it's, I don't have to worry about like makeup or speaking perfectly for, you know, I don't, things are relative. It's a very playful medium, and it's a lot of fun.
That's great.
Wish I had time to do more of it than I have right now, but I do enjoy getting on Snapchat.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today. I need to let you go so you'll have time to make more recipes so that I can read them and think about making them. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, David. This has been delightful.
Great. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by Audible, and they'd like to give you a free audiobook. Choose from over 180,000 audiobooks on any subject you can imagine. Just go to kadivy.net/audible to claim your free audiobook. There you have it, an inspiring story from Elise Bauer of Simply Recipes. If you're trying to decide what to have for dinner tonight, go check out Simply Recipes, and I promise you aren't going to be disappointed. I love her story of turning a challenge into an opportunity, and this is something that you'll see many times with successful entrepreneurs. For more of that, check out Your Weakness is Your Superpower, episode 13 with Manish Sethi of Pavlok, who, by the way, was recently on ABC's Shark Tank. And before I go, I've got to ask, do you like books? If you do, sign up for my book recommendations. About 90% will be nonfiction on subjects spanning from biographies to neuroscience. Just go to kadivy.net/reading and get the first set of recommendations right away. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Kadivy. The theme music for this show is CNU, performed by The Album Leaf, courtesy of Sub Pop Records. Love Your Work is a production of Kadivy, Inc.